Good morning, everyone. Thanks for coming out so early to hear about our work looking at how organic perennial pastures outperformed annual pastures with lower nitrogen losses and equivalent yields when they were exposed to drought and experimentally applied grazing and extreme rainfall events. So today I want to sort of tell you what motivated this research, what we did, and what we found. So first I'm going to talk a little bit about why we're looking at organic pastures and why we're looking at extreme rain events at our site in Pennsylvania, and then look at the comparison between the annual pasture and the perennial pasture. And in our system, we have the annual pasture versus the perennial pasture in the first year, the overwinter period, and then the second year of the rotation, the annual pasture went into a corn silage and the perennial pasture stayed pasture. So we have those three phases to look at performance. And we'll conclude by looking at benefits and drawbacks of these two alternative systems. So why were we doing this? For organic production, the National Organic Program adopted the pasture rule, which is increasing the importance of pasture to organic livestock production and dairy production. So now organic animals must graze 30% of their diet during a grazing season that's at least 120 days. And pasture must be managed like a crop. So we're talking about both increasing the amount of pasture and increasing the intensity of management of that pasture. And along with this, there's been tremendous market growth in organic dairy production over the last 15 years or so, with national growth in yellow and then growth in Pennsylvania in red. And you can see the rate of growth is very similar nationally and in Pennsylvania. And this rapid market growth means that more organic pastures will need to be established to support this expanding organic dairy production both nationally and in Pennsylvania, where I'm working. And along with these policy and market changes, there's also been climate change in the Northeast, particularly an increase in the number of extreme rain events, defined as more than 25 millimeters in 24 hours. And these rain events, and you can see in the blue, is the top 10 rain events in central Pennsylvania since 1948. Seven of those occurred since 2000, and only one of them occurred before 1990. So there is much more of these occurring recently. And in terms of when these events are occurring during the year, these are the same top 10 rain events, just broken out by the month in which they occurred on the right side of the screen. And you can see that most of the events are occurring within the July to October period, the gray, orange, and red. So how are these three changes going to impact these pasture systems? We looked at, so do annual or perennial pasture systems best meet this sort of trifecta of demands, the increased production to meet both the pasture rule and the market demands, and then along with that, climate change. So, again, our annual pasture treatment is sorghum sudangrass, a C4 warm season annual, underseeded with red clover in the first year, and then that rotates to corn silage in the second year of the experiment. And our perennial pasture is a C3 cool season orchard grass mixed with red clover in all years of the experiment. And we wanted to know which of these systems performed better agronomically and environmentally, particularly in terms of greenhouse gas emissions, which in the Northeast there's sort of a shortage of studies looking at greenhouse gas emissions from organic systems and pasture systems and grazed pasture systems in particular. And when we think about greenhouse gases, the largest portion of agriculture's greenhouse gas impact comes from nitrous oxide. You can see that about half of agriculture's greenhouse gas impact is nitrous oxide. And nitrous oxide is a much more potent greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide. It's long-lived in the atmosphere. And globally, 75% of nitrous oxide emissions come from agriculture. So agriculture is the primary contributor of nitrous oxide, And then within agriculture, if you're looking at the greenhouse gas footprint, especially of a system that's a crop production system or field soil based, nitrous oxide is the vast majority of that. And emissions of nitrous oxide peak when soils are wet and nitrate levels are high, such as after a rain event or after a grazing event. So we wanted to see which system emitted more nitrous oxide when exposed to grazing and extreme rainfall, which should theoretically be the conditions under which maximum nitrous oxide would be produced. So we implemented an experiment where we applied a grazing and extreme rain event treatment three times a year in both treatments. So the C3 perennial was established in March, and then we established the annual pasture in May or June of 2012 or 2013. And then we applied the grazing and extreme rain event sequences in that window where we're seeing more of these extreme rain events between July and October. Each event consisted of baseline measurements, a grazing treatment, and then an extreme rain event treatment, where we applied 76 millimeters of water in 24 hours. And then we followed the simulated grazing and rain event over a month-long period. So again, we applied these treatments in August 2012, September 2012, and October 2012. And then we did it again in July 2013, August 2013, and September 2013, and you'll see the dates vary a little bit, and that just was related to when forage was available in each year. And we hypothesized that this sorghum Sudan grass's annual pasture might offer some increased resilience to nitrous oxide emissions, because in publications that talk about monthly forage availability, sorghum Sudan grass has a higher growth rate in that July to October period compared to orchard grass. And so we thought that a higher growth rate in the sorghum Sudan grass might make it better able to take up the nitrogen and the water that came in the grazing and the extreme rain event, and thereby reduce nitrous oxide that was emitted from the system. But what we found was that nitrous oxide, the biggest single thing that controlled how much nitrous oxide came off was timing, whether it was the year, the season, or the month, the particular month of the experimental application. So this graph here is showing the mean monthly nitrous oxide flux in 2012 and 2013, and you'll notice that there's a big difference. We saw higher fluxes in general in 2012 across all the simulations and both vegetation treatments than in 2013. And I think that this was because in 2012, as many other people have discussed, there was an extremely hot, dry year. And we had the second hottest May on record in Pennsylvania, and both pasture types suffered due to that drought, and were less able to cope with these disturbance events. And then there was also this sort of seasonal effect. So going from midsummer on the left through to the fall on the right, the mean monthly nitrous oxide flux decreased through the season, and this is probably due to decreases in soil temperature. We looked at this using a regression approach, and soil moisture or soil temperature explained about 8% of variability in flux. So that's what we're seeing here. But the effect was also dependent on the year. So in 2012, we had this nice sort of linear pattern, but in 2013, there was the lowest flux, monthly flux actually occurred in after the August experiment. And I think that this was due to an extremely dry August in 2013, which truncated the length of the nitrous oxide flux after the grazing and rain event. The soil just dried out even after adding that 76 millimeters of water really quickly. But then, the best laid plans. The growth rate that we thought we were going to see was not what we actually saw. And the only month in which the annual pasture, that sorghum, sudan grass, red clover, had a higher growth rate than the perennial was in July. And then the later months of the year, the perennial picked back up and was actually, outperforming the annual. So we can revise our hypothesis to say that if the growth rate impacts nitrous oxide flux, we're actually going to expect higher fluxes from the annuals, except in July when their growth rate exceeds the perennials. And indeed, this is what we saw. So the this graph, they're clustered by the year of the experiment. So 2012, August, September, and October on the left, and then on the right are the 2013 events, July, August, and September. And you can see that in 2012, the annuals had higher fluxes than the perennials, both in August and in September. We didn't have a July simulation that year because the establishment was so poor and so slow due to that early season drought that there wasn't enough forage available in July to do an experiment. And there was also higher flux from the annuals in September, October of 2013 when the annuals entered dormancy ahead of the perennials. The perennials only exhibited a higher monthly flux of nitrous oxide in July of 2013. And again, that goes back, I think, to the growth rates that we saw. But, we thought that grazing and extreme rainfall would be a primary source of nitrous oxide in these systems. But what we saw was that actually the biggest flux came in the spring period after during the corn establishment. So fluxes in the annual system were 10 times higher in the spring than in the perennial system. So this is really where the big difference was. And then again, over the winter, the annual had a greater vulnerability to nitrogen loss, losing almost twice as much nitrate than the perennial system. And both systems provided similar yields. Of course, when I wrote my abstract, the perennial system looked better because we didn't have I didn't have the 2014 corn silage yields, which made the annual system look a little bit better. But even still, this includes the 2014 yields, and they're not statistically different. So so let's learn more about the agronomic performance. I'll give a little plug for my co-author Denise's poster this afternoon. She has a much more detailed look at that. So to summarize, the annual system had a strength in that July period over the perennial system, but in all other time points, the perennial pasture had lower vulnerability to nitrous oxide loss and lower nitrate leaching. So with that, I'll acknowledge my co-authors and everyone that's helped me with this and take any questions. Leaching
over
I think that the red clover actually provides a little bit of resilience to the orchard grass mix because the red clover doesn't have as much summer dormancy as the orchard grass, and so it keeps the pasture going a little bit better in the summer, and I think that's what saved the perennial pasture in August. It's not the orchard grass coming back on as it does sort of later in the fall, but the red clover. So